To judge from the piles of books, reels of movie film, games, comic books, prequels, sequels, it's safe to say that the stories of Camelot, the Round Table, and King Arthur hold a special place in our imaginations. You're listening to the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College, and I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. The stories surrounding Arthur have it all. Love, romance and adultery, noble and good deeds, dishonorable and evil deeds, friendship and betrayal, lively feasts and deadly battles, magic swords and malicious witchcraft, heroes and villains, valiant, true, brave knights clothed in bright armor, and vile scoundrels. Camelot all started so well, and it ended so badly. This summer, high school students attending Wyoming Catholic College's two-week-long PEAK program studied the Arthurian stories with Dr. Tiffany Schubert. I asked Dr. Schubert what she had in mind as she taught the course.
Well, we read a wide variety of authors, and that was one of the things I really wanted them to get out of the course, was to see how diverse the Arthurian matter really is. We've got chronicles talking about Arthur. We've got prose accounts of Arthur. We have poetry about Arthur. We have long, long poems about Arthur. We've got short poems about Arthur. It spans so many genres, and I wanted them to see that that diversity. I showed them some movie clips as well, and we listened to a little bit of Wagner, so they could see that the Arthurian legend spills out beyond literal pages and into modern media.
I remember seeing the musical Camelot live as a kid, and then they made it into the movie. And the movie is just horribly 60s, but it's the Arthur story. It's faithful to the Arthur story.
Yeah, there are tons of movie versions out there. I highly recommend the Monty Python and the Holy Grail if you're looking for something that gives you a real taste of the kind of absurdity of the Arthurian legend. It does that brilliantly.
Yeah, I remember reading Mallory and saying to myself, this is Monty Python.
That's right, yeah. Well, and those guys are students of Arthurian literature. They were studying at their universities, and they're reading these sources in their original and translating it into modern form. And I think that's something that's so powerful about the Arthurian legend is its flexibility. So much can be done with it. Mm-hmm. It's so malleable.
Now, you mentioned in your lecture on poetry at the Wyoming School of Catholic Thought that romance poetry kind of arose suddenly and unexpectedly. Could you explain that a bit? And does Mallory's Death of Arthur fit into that whole genre of romance?
If we're talking about romance in the sense of romantic love between men and women, it is very much a creation of medieval poets. And the Arthurian legend is very much involved in that. So figures like Tristan and Isolde or Lancelot and Guinevere become these emblematic figures in romantic tradition, and we still invoke them as exemplars, in some cases, right, of tragic love. And by the time we get to Mallory, the tradition of romantic love has been pretty well established, and the tropes and the sort of the patterns of behavior that men and women fall into have been pretty settled. But Mallory gives us one of the fullest accounts of just the Arthurian legend as a whole, and he fits the story of Lancelot and Guinevere into that. And for Mallory, the tragedy of Arthur is very much caused by the love between Lancelot and Guinevere. There are other causes as well, but romantic love becomes a real problem. And that's not the only way of looking at romantic love in the tradition, and there are those who champion romantic love and hold up its beauty. But for Mallory, he sees this love that has kind of gone beyond the proper bounds as ultimately destructive to the Round Table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, well, the romantic love went beyond courtly love. It turned into adultery.
Right, and the relationship between courtly love and adultery is super complicated and kind of depends on who you're talking to and which author you're looking at about whether or not it should be consummated or not. But we can say that courtly love, the romantic love as we call it now, is not exclusively directed towards your wife, and maybe not even primarily directed towards your wife, often directed towards another woman who is sometimes unattainable.
Now, how do these stories critique our ideas of love and romance, or the students' ideas of love and romance, and how do they reinforce those ideas?
So one of the, I thought, was really fun thing that we did during this class, I brought in some pop music and we listened to a couple of songs, and I had the students identify the way that love is presented in those songs, and what we realized is that it's so medieval. It's so incredibly medieval. Just the way that we think about how love works very much comes from this tradition of courtly love. So our idea of love as one of the most intense and intimate experiences that a human being can have. Love is a kind of sickness. It causes us pain. We sort of long or yearn, or you know, you pine for your beloved. All of that is very much coming from this tradition. So I wanted to show the students that their understanding of love has been shaped fundamentally by these medieval sources. Now, some of our students who are coming in general from a fairly traditional background, which emphasizes marriage and all of that, which is, you know, all to the good, courtly love is a real problem, a real challenge for them, because it is so often extramarital. So I think that one of the things that courtly love can give us, or one of the ways that we can understand it and approach it and maybe appreciate it, despite those elements of it that are profoundly problematic, is for us to try, and this is something C.S. Lewis talks about, imagine a world in which romantic love played no role in the stories that we tell or in the expectations that we had for our lives. So imagine a world in which we thought, our thoughts about marriage were mostly practical, mostly, or you could say, right, political, rather than this intimate connection between two human beings who can share, right, the most important things on this really profound level. Courtly love, through various other, it's taken some detours, but I think courtly love has given us that, and I think that's really important for understanding the tradition of love, and also for understanding the medieval romances themselves.
Now, in Mallory, at least, there's also still a strong tradition of friendship love between men, especially. After wreaking havoc and turning Arthur against Lancelot and destroying the kingdom, essentially, Sir Gawain, before he dies, writes a moving letter to Lancelot apologizing and seeking reconciliation. Lancelot spends a day and a night kneeling at Gawain's grave. I mean, tell us about the friendships within this.
Yeah, there's a great moment in Mallory at the end when Arthur is surveying what has happened, and he thinks, wives, he's lamenting this dissension within the Round Table, and he thinks, wives I could have a plenty, right? So I could just get another Guinevere, but I couldn't get another Lancelot. I couldn't get another friend like him. For Mallory, I think friendship is the highest form of human affection, higher than romantic love. And so that places Mallory in an interesting position within the tradition. But for him, the friendship between the knights is the essence of the Round Table, and that shared commitment to personal excellence and to the pursuit of these high ideals of, right, of honor and of courage. That's the very essence of what makes Arthur great, and what makes this fellowship a fellowship, this bond, and the real tragedy for Mallory is the breaking up of the friendship. So you mentioned Gawain, and it's this division between Lancelot and Gawain that is the one of the major catalysts for the destruction of the Round Table, because Gowan finds out Lancelot accidentally killed his brothers, and he becomes enraged with grief and refuses time and time again to make peace. So it's the breaking up of a friendship that ultimately leads to the breaking up of the fellowship, which ultimately leads to the fall and the death of Arthur.
Well, and the breaking up of the friendship all starts because courtly love gets out of control.
That's right. Yes, that's right. That's absolutely right. And so I think that's where we really see Mallory's position on courtly love. Certainly when courtly love becomes adulterous, it becomes this real threat to friendship.
Now, are there other traditions other than Mallory that look at it in different ways?
So the first author in the Arthurian tradition who talks about Lancelot and Guinevere, at least, is Chrétien de Troyes. This is the first mention that we have of the Lancelot and Guinevere affair. And it's a pretty complicated text, because it seems as if that Chrétien is writing at the request of the Lady of Champagne, his superior, and he writes it in a way that does seem at times to celebrate the love between them. Love between them that has this sort of holy quality about it. It's described as approaching Guinevere, and she is dearer to him than any relic could be. So there is within the tradition texts that do celebrate this beautiful intimacy between a man and a woman. Now, and as I said, right, it is problematic because of the adultery, but courtly love, the tradition itself, is not, I think we have to be careful, it's not modern licentiousness. It's not encouraging people to do whatever they want to do. It actually comes with pretty elaborate moral standards that look kind of different than the ones that we're accustomed to, right, from a kind of Christian perspective. But there are expectations for how you should behave and how you should act, and this kind of love is meant to transform the person into someone noble, into someone virtuous. Again, it looks a little different than a more traditional Christian perspective. We could say, maybe add Dante to the mix and say that Dante is part of this courtly love tradition. But what he does with a figure like Beatrice, who is his lady, to whom he writes poetry, to whom he loves, even though he is married to Dante. Dante has a wife and he has kids with her. But he loves Beatrice. He transforms Beatrice into this conduit for divine grace and love. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where courtly love, when transformed, can take us.
Right, and of course that's vastly different from what's in our culture.
That's right, yes, exactly. Yeah. It's a kind of the blend, Dante blends the Christian tradition with the courtly love tradition, mm-hmm. and shows us what courtly love can do when it's sanctified.
Now, according to Mallory, on Arthur's tomb, they inscribe "Hic jacet Arthuras, Rex quondam rexque futuris." Here lies Arthur, the once and future king. What are we to make of that?
I think this is part of the appeal of the Arthurian literature, early Arthurian legend, say, is the possibility that Arthur could come back. So the Arthurian legend gives us, we just talked about the tragedy, gives us the tragic collapse of an ideal, this dream of friendship, really. The intimate friendship can kind of bind people together in pursuit of something higher than themselves, and they can create a realm of peace that is the envy of the world. And that all falls apart. So we get that gut punch of tragedy. And then suddenly things change just a little bit, and you get this hint, this possibility that maybe Arthur can come back. So we're not left in utter despair. Hope is offered by the legend. Now Mallory doesn't want to commit. He doesn't want to say. He talks about Arthur's body. It's been seen, but he sort of leaves open this small possibility for maybe the return maybe the return of Arthur. And if we want to get, if we want to get Christian here, this is we would say one of the reasons that the Arthurian legend speaks so deeply to us, because it touches on some of these fundamental truths of the human condition, right? The tragedy of the human condition and its, you know, striving to live up to the ideal and then utterly failing to do so, then also this perpetual hope that we have of resurrection.
In The Ballad of King Arthur, G.K. Chesterton wrote, "Great tales are told of dead men gone, and all men live by tales, and glory be to the endless tale, whose old news never fails. Arthur is lost in Lyonesse. Kings sought his grave in vain, and old men quote and question still if Arthur comes again." For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.